Fathers, we've been just dwelling on how good it is to be covered by your precious blood, to know that it's well even though life doesn't seem like it, even when it is good, to know that it's not just because we're feeling happy, but because you care. New every morning are your mercies. We know that we have your grace and mercy because we are alive. If it were not so, we would have been consumed. That's how we know your everlasting faithfulness and mercy to us. So as we think about how you tend and look after us, how you want the best for us, and yet how we seem to have conditioned ourselves often to the way of the world, to what is good for a career, what is good for a social way of life, what is good for a particular type of worship in a church that we go to. Just to stop and think, is that what God actually wants us to do? Is that how he wants to lead us? So as we think about these things, not that we necessarily feel that we're doing it wrong, it's just that we want to know that we are doing it right. So Heavenly Father, we just ask that as we look at your word this evening, we'll just find things which strike a chord, which are meaningful, which although were written sometimes 2,500, 3,000 years ago, actually have a relevance today in the 21st century. Because we change, in fact we change from day to day, but you never change. You're the same as you always have been, loving, merciful, wanting to redeem, take us out of darkness into your glorious light. And when we ponder on these things, we think, why are we trying to do it ourselves? So, will you just speak to us this evening through your word, in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. There's a lovely hymn in this book. We're all on Songs of Fellowship apart from the Showers of Blessing. Number 36. This is a hymn which goes back to my childhood, which I've loved because of the imagery of it. Elizabeth Cecilia Clephane has got this picture of being beneath the cross of Jesus. So there's a cross here, and beyond, actually this is quite a good illustration, is a dark grave. And we are over there, and the cross is here, and the grave is there. And that's the image that she's got. But look at verse 3. It says, "There lies beneath its shadow, but on the farther side, the darkness of..." So we've got the cross here, "the darkness of an awful grave which gapes both deep and wide. And there, between us, between us living and death, the grave, stands the cross, two arms outstretched to save, like a watchman set to guard the way to that eternal grave." Isn't that a good picture of the cross? A watchman. You can't go there. You can't go. I've stopped it. I've made it impossible for you to go there. And that's the picture that Elizabeth Cecilia Clephane had. "And I take across thy shadow for my abiding place." That's where I want to live. You know this one? 36. My subject this evening is pastors and pastoring. And I want to tell you where I'm coming from, so that basically you can nod off if you like, because I'm not going to tell you anything that I know directly about, but I know directly because I've experienced it, but because I've lived in the sort of shadow of it. I was a PK, a pastor's kid. My grandchildren are MKs, they're missionary kids. They're all tarred with the same brush. They were brought up by doting parents, and oftentimes they were less than perfect brats. Certainly it was so in my case. And during my life, I have been surrounded by pastors. So I know a bit about it. And my brother became a pastor. My sister married a pastor. My other sister is also a pastor's wife. My father was a pastor. My brother-in-law was a pastor and a missionary. Emmy does pastoral work in his church in Romania. And so generations above and below my great-grandparents. And what happened? When it came to old Mox here, he never got the call to be a pastor. But what I did do was to become a shepherd. Now, I've got a little visual aid here. I'll give Pete one first, because he's quite likely to know this. Can you share? Do you know what that is, Roy? Do you mind sharing? Yes, you can see, there, and you can see there. Have you got a little one? You can show me. Do you know what this is? Some of you will. Oh, almost certainly will. Shepherd's purse. Shepherd's purse. Do you now know what the Latin name is?
Yeah.
Do you know what the Latin name is? Yeah, Shepherdius
Perseus.
No. Much more understandable in a way. Yes. It's one of those lovely Latin names which, when you learn it, you know that there aren't many. I only know of two, actually. It's called Capsella Bursa Pastoris. Well done, Pete. Capsella, that's the little capsules, the seed capsules, are Bursa Pastoris. Look at them, and they're called Shepherd's Purse. Okay, so that is, I mean, if you saw the flower before that came into to seed, you wouldn't know that it was called Shepherd's Purse, because it doesn't look anything like it. It's a little white crucifer flower. And yes, so that is Shepherd's Purse. And you can get from the Latin name that the word shepherd is bursa, is pastor, pastoris, the purse of the shepherd. It's the genitive case, isn't it? And so one of the things that I think we can learn from the subject pastor and pastoring is that it's something to do with shepherding. Now, I have for the past 15 years kept a small flock of sheep. And so I know a little bit about sheep, but in no way would I call myself a shepherd. The reason is that I'm a hobbyist. We have in our congregation John and Mary, who are farmers. It's their living. They live the life, or they used to live the life. They still live on the land. And in fact, somebody is still living the life this afternoon and evening, isn't he? Clacking away behind a combine harvester. But there's a great deal of difference between keeping sheep and being a shepherd. And when I have read many scriptural accounts of how the shepherds were out all the time, when I go to Romania to see Karen and Emmy, I've met a shepherd there, and he's out in all weathers. I've seen him out in October. I've seen him out in the heat of May when we've been. And he's rugged. He looks after those sheep virtually 24/7. And it must be one of the most boring jobs in the world. Watching these jolly old sheep munching away at the very sparse foliage, moving on, being moved on by landowners. Oh, you can't come here, and you've got to feed on the verges, and trying to keep the sheep off the lush pasture. And the vet, which Emmy uses, limps. Why? Because he was set on by a pack of shepherd of sheep dogs. They're vicious. They are hard. It's a difficult, tough life. And I've brought just some shepherding kind of illustration things, just so that you know what sort of thing a shepherd has to do. Let me just plonk that there. And I'll just bring some of these things that I've got. Let me just show you. That's my Eastern Jalaba. And you'll probably sometimes see this at Christmas and things that Alison does. And I'm not going to wear it. It's sweltering hot. And it's made probably of goat's hair rather than sheep's skin. I bought it in Morocco when I went there, so it's an Eastern North African shepherd. This is one of my sheep. We used to have some nice Jacob ones, but we don't seem to have any more nowadays. Maybe it's more like a bear than a sheep, isn't it? And then shepherds have to look after their sheep. And one of the worst things I have to do is treat sheep for maggots.
Yeah.
Fly strike. It brought an instant response from them. We've seen it. It is horrible because the flies lay their eggs on the fleece, oftentimes around their backsides, sometimes on their shoulder, and then the maggots hatch out and they eat down into, you can't see them on the surface, they eat down into the flesh of the sheep, and I've seen a sheep virtually eaten alive. Maggots. They're horrible, horrible, horrible. So we try not to treat them, but to prevent it. And this stuff is clipped, it's a pour on, it's a spray on. And so every summer, after shearing, we treat the lambs, and then when the fleece grows a bit more, we treat the sheep. The other things that they get is worms. Not earthworms or things like that, but worms which they pick up from the soil and from snails. We have to treat them to prevent that. Sometimes we have problems in the lambing, and I have to get out one of these, make up some of this, and feed them. And the other thing that they get, because sheep are designed to live on very rough, rugged, mountainous regions, where we keep them on lovely pasture. Shall I be speaking in here, John?
Yes.
Okay, lovely lush pasture, they get foot rot, and so we have to sometimes treat them. We sometimes have to cut their toenails, trim them up, and of course they don't like being tipped upside down by me and their feet trimmed, but if they do let their hooves grow, the hooves can curl round and they get stone in it, and that can be painful, and they get foot rot, and we have to spray them. There's also a huge amount of legislation to do with. Every time I move my sheep, I have to fill out paperwork. Every year I have to send an annual return to the local authority and to DEFRA. So keeping sheep isn't just having a bunch of ovines in your field. You have to look after them as well. There's a lambing tool if you have a difficult lambing to try and pull them out. I'll show you this. That's a prolapse spoon, ladies. You kind of probably have a fit in a minute. Gents, if you want to have a fit as well, that's a Berdizzo's for castrating the ram lambs. That's their food if you really want to. Oh, I sometimes trim this with the like scissors but shears. There's some food. Actually, it smells not too bad. When they're born, we spray their umbilical. You can start to see, there's quite a lot to keeping sheep. And the other thing we do is to... Oh, I didn't bring a ring there. Those are called... That's another way of castrating the ram lambs. But we also dock their tails so that you don't get too much mess on their tails, which, again, attracts flies and maggots. So that's some of the things that a shepherd has to do. When I first had sheep, I thought, because I'd watched my friend Ray down in Barnstable in North Devon, and he's got a big flock, and he used to have this crook. It's a leg crook, so the sheep's running away from you, and you hook it around its leg, and you can pull it back and get hold of it if it's running away from you. I soon found out that that's far harder work than necessary. If you put them in a pen and fold them, if you feed them on a regular basis so that they very soon come to the bucket, they can make them follow you, and you can follow them into the shed and then catch them easily. So you start to learn things. There's one of my ram's horns, which a neighbour made into a little walking stick. And of course, there's the traditional shepherd's neck crook. For catching them by the neck. So shepherds have to do things to the sheep which aren't particularly pleasant, like trimming their feet, castrating the ram lambs, treating them with wormer and shoving it down their throat, and you can see how they bite the end of the syringe, treating them for fly strike. And that's what a shepherd or somebody who looks after sheep has to do. Now, having told you that, we'll get on to pastors and pastoring, because sometimes pastors have to do things which the flock don't particularly like. Before we do, I want to read a passage in Ezekiel which is all about shepherding. It's beautiful. I hope you'll enjoy it. It's a long passage. But in order to set the scene for that, you've got a piece of paper with showers of blessing on it. Have you not? Thank you. I don't know why I love that song. I'm a gardener and rain can be a right menace sometimes. This is my grass cutting week coming up, and I hear it could be quite unsettled at times during the week. It's dire when I have to cut so many lawns when they're wet and damp and it's raining and I can't really get on with it. So how do I love that? Well, I love it because I'm going to read the following passage. Ezekiel chapter 34. Ezekiel chapter 34, and the title in our New International Version is almost certainly, if you've got the same version as I have, Shepherds and Sheep. This is Ezekiel writing. He's been in exile. Israel, or certainly Judah particularly, had been finally punished by God for their waywardness. They had consistently gone against him. He had constantly sent to them prophets and people to try and bring them back into his way, and they hadn't listened, And eventually, as the writer to the Chronicles said, there was no other way. He had to do what he said he was going to do years ago and send them into exile. So they were far away from their land. They didn't have a temple to worship in. They didn't feel sort of cohesive on their promised land, their territory. Yes, they still lived in presumably their ghettos. They knew the other Israelites amongst them. And then we had a series of people who came along to bring them out, to encourage them. People like Nehemiah, who brought them back to build the walls. People like Ezra, who brought them back and established the temple worship again. People like Haggai, who exhorted them to get up off their backsides and do some work. Zephaniah, who said, it's not your work that's going to do it, it's my spirit, says the Lord. And then Ezekiel comes along and says, look, you've had some pretty rubbish shepherds in the past. Let me take over, chaps. Listen to it in his words. The word of the Lord came to me, son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to the shepherds of Israel who only take care of themselves. Should not the shepherds take care of the flock? You eat the curds, clothe yourselves with the wool, and slaughter the choice animals, but you don't take care of the flock. You've not strengthened the weak, or healed the sick, or bound up the injured. You've not brought back the strays, or searched for the lost. You've ruled them harshly and brutally. So they were scattered because there was no shepherd. And when they were scattered, they became food for all the wild animals. My sheep wandered all over the mountains and on every high hill. They were scattered over the whole earth, and no one searched or looked for them. Therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. As surely as I live, declares the sovereign Lord, because my flock lacks a shepherd, and so has been plundered and become food for all the wild animals, and because my shepherds do not search for my flock, but cared for themselves rather than for my flock, therefore, O shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says. I am against the shepherds and will hold them accountable for my flock. I'll remove them from tending the flock so that the shepherds can no longer feed themselves. I'll rescue my flock from their mouths, and it will no longer be food for them. For this is what the Sovereign Lord says, I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he's with them, so will I look after my sheep. I'll rescue them from all the places where they were scattered on a day of clouds and darkness. I'll bring them out of the nations and gather them from the countries, and I'll bring them into their own land. I'll pasture them on the mountains of Israel, in the ravines and in all the settlements in the land. I'll tend them in a good pasture, and the mountain heights of Israel will be their grazing land. There they will lie down in good grazing land, and there they will feed in a rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. I myself will tend my sheep and make them lie down, declares the Sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I'll bind up the injured and strengthen the weak. But the sleek and the strong I will destroy. I will shepherd my flock with justice. And as for you, my flock, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. I will judge between one sheep and another, and between rams and goats. Is it not enough for you to feed on the good pasture? Must you also trample the rest of the pasture with your feet? Is it not enough for you to drink clear water? Must you also muddy the rest with your feet? Must my flock feed on what you have trampled and drink what you have muddied with your feet? Therefore, this is what the Sovereign Lord says to them. See, I myself will judge between the fat sheep and the lean sheep. Because you shove with flank and shoulder, butting all the weak sheep with your horns until you've driven them away, I'll save my flock, and they will no longer be plundered. I will judge between one sheep and another. I'll place over them one shepherd, my servant David, and he will tend them. He will tend them and be their shepherd. I, the Lord, will be their God, and my servant David will be prince amongst them. I, the Lord, have spoken. I will make a covenant of peace with them and rid the land of wild beasts so that they may live in the desert and sleep in the forests in safety. I'll bless them and the places surrounding my hill. I'll send down showers in season. There will be showers of blessing. Get it? The trees of the field will yield their fruit, and the ground will yield its crops. The people will be secure in their land. They'll know that I am the Lord when I break the bars of their yoke and rescue them from the hands of those who enslave them. They will no longer be plundered by the nations, nor will wild animals devour them. They'll live in safety, and no one will make them afraid. I will provide for them a land renowned for its crops, and they will no longer be victims of famine in the land or bear the scorn of the nations. Then they will know that I, the Lord their God, am with them, and that they, the house of Israel, are my people, declares the Lord. You, my sheep, the sheep of my pasture, are people, and I am your God, declares the Sovereign Lord. And that is the relationship between sheep and shepherds and pastures, pastors and the flock. What is the first thing that you notice about me and a sheep? Okay, don't be rude. I walk on two legs. Sheep walk on four. They call us the naked ape, don't they? I'm a bit hairy, but I'm not like a sheep, which has to be shorn annually. I don't get down on all fours and eat grass, for starters. I'm an omnivore. I've got canine teeth. I can eat meat as well. So we eat different things. We walk in different ways. We speak a different language. We look totally different. And have you ever thought that a pastor of a church may well be a completely different creature from you and me? somebody not so much physical, but somebody who is spiritual. Somebody who feeds on different things, who wants the best for his flock. And although they want to do one thing, perhaps go to different places. Sheep are notoriously inquisitive. Whenever I take them into a new field after they've been in another field, and there's an old saying, you should never keep a sheep in the field beyond, is it, two sounds of the church bells or something like that. So every fortnight or so, you should be moving the sheep on every fortnight to 3 weeks so that they get new pasture and a pasture. I keep getting these terms muddled up, don't I? In Israel, of course, when they're wandering around the wilderness area and the sheep are feeding on rather sparse vegetation, the shepherd needs to know where to go. He needs to be able to lead his sheep because they won't necessarily go in the best places. They won't necessarily go in the safest places. If they start getting separated from the flock, they may well actually be taken by sheep rustlers, bandits, people who are just starving, may come in contact with the leper community or whatever in the days of biblical times. So the shepherd needs to keep his eye on his sheep and know where to go. Know that on the north side of the hill, it's probably going to get less sun. So there could well be some more vegetation there because it hasn't shriveled up in the heat of the hot summers, which you can get in eastern countries. And this sort of thing, at the end of the day, know where they can go to get water. Where's the nearest oasis? Have I dug a well? Where are they going to get their water from? And where is the produce going to go? You know, when the children of Israel were in Egypt, shepherds were anathema to the Egyptians. And I think I probably know why. Because the shepherds would have to milk their sheep. And then if they were miles away from anybody, they couldn't get the fresh milk to them. So they'd have to make the milk into cheese. And so the shepherds were probably quite smelly creatures. Carrying cheese around, milking sheep, rubbing. I mean, when I come back from actually treating the sheep, I can smell myself all right. You know, it's they're smelly old creatures. And they were probably despised by the rest of the populace, certainly by the Egyptians who happen to like cattle rather than sheep. Cattle aren't, they do smell, don't they? But I don't think they're quite as pungent as a sheepy smell. So shepherds are sometimes going to be rather despised by the rest of the populace because they smell differently, they live a different lifestyle, they live in the open spaces, they're rugged, tough, they don't stand any nonsense, and they don't live in towns and have white-collar jobs and that sort of thing. So we're starting to build up a little bit of a picture of how different shepherds can be. And of course you get good shepherds and bad shepherds. And the way that God portrays the shepherd of Israel, they totally let God down. They hadn't been shepherding the flock. They'd just been looking out for their own benefit. And you know, these days the media thrive on religious gossip. How ministers and vicars and bishops and pastors have affairs, have relationships, same-sex relationships. And then you get into all sorts of legal problems where somebody says, you should invite me to come to your church, even though I've got a single-sex partner, because the law says that we should all be equal, and therefore, you know, I can do what I like, and, you know, you have to allow it. It's my human rights. And doesn't that smack of what we've been reading here in the passage here? You shepherds just want the best for yourself. You just want to keep the flock so that you can eat the curds, the nice bits. That's one of the reasons why I think they must make sheep out of it, cheese out of the sheep and goats' milk, because they can't carry it around in the heat of the noonday sun for very long. And they love it. They grow fat on it. They want the best. They eat the best sheep. And then when they get back to Jerusalem, the centre of worship, where sacrifices have to take place, they've only got the three-legged ones, the one that was slightly mauled by a wolf, the one that got away and fell down a ravine and still limps, and all that sort of thing. The shepherds are just looking after number one. And I think it's the way of the world that we often think about number one. But let me put it from another point of view. Because in this passage from Ezekiel, God's talking also to the flock. And he says, I know some of you, you're a bit bully boys. You nudge and push with sheep with your flank and your horns. You shove and, what was the words? You shove with flank and shoulder, butting all the weak sheep with your horns. And yeah, you do in churches get hobnail boots and doormats, don't you? And God says, I know about you. And I strongly suspect, as we go through a procedure for looking for a pastor, that people will make their feelings well known. What you want, what you think is best. And yet, when I look at it, when I go to market, I don't look at the sheep in their pens there and say, okay, chaps or girls, in fact, as most of the sheep that I'd be likely to buy are going to be female, ewes, which of you wants to come to my flock then? It's not the sheep that choose the pastor, the shepherd. It's the shepherd that chooses the sheep. And I just don't, you know, we've got into a routine, and different churches have been pastorless, and we know the procedure for trying to find another pastor, and we go through it. But is that actually the right way? I'm going to read a lovely scripture towards the end, which shows how we can even trust God on that one. But let me balance the books by saying Israel didn't come out of it terribly well. God had given them the priests and the Levites, the people to lead them in the worship, to teach them the scriptures, their rabbis, their teachers, their scribes, their people well versed in the letter of the law. And they grew fat on the proceeds. Because when you think about it, the Levites, the tribe of Levi, actually got a 12th of the, because there are 12 tribes, two half tribes of Manasseh and 12 tribes. And if they were all tithing, there were 12 tenths of the income coming into one tribe. So they actually got more than anybody else. I don't know whether you ever thought of it that way. I just was mulling it over, you know, as you do when you're reading the Bible. So the priests and the Levites grew a bit fat on their income, and they started abusing their position. And then you have people like Eli and his sons, who were so corrupt that they weren't even doing the job correctly. So yes, you do get bad pastors, bad shepherds, bad people looking after the flock, even though God has allowed it to happen. But at the end of the day, the people didn't choose them. They were given that position by God. So what should a shepherd be doing? Well, now we get on to perhaps slightly more New Testament passages. One of the things that I very soon learnt, and this was in the first couple of years that I had sheep, the fields that I had first put the sheep on weren't very good fields. They had been let go and sort of gone to scrub and we cleared them, and they were pretty sparse of grass, but over the years they've improved enormously with sheep grazing them and a certain amount of management. But in the early years I didn't have enough grass to get through the whole season, so I took my sheep up to a shepherd friend at Stony Littleton and I put my sheep in with his sheep. And did you know that sheep tend to flock together? And although his sheep might be on one side of the field, mine would be on another side, just quietly grazing all together as a flock. And when it came for me to move them on out of the field, I went into the field with my bucket of food. And I said, come on, girls, come on, come on. And they started following me. And I led them out of the field, and Frank's sheep didn't even bother to come and have a look. Even though I'd been feeding them on occasions when Frank got so past being able to look after the flock that I was helping there. But the sheep knew who I was, and I knew who mine was, partly because I only had a small flock and they were easily identified. And I knew them mostly by name. So when you get on to John chapter 10, Jesus is talking about, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. And let's have a look at John chapter 10, because it's a lovely, lovely passage. I tell you the truth. The man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The man who enters the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. Can you picture it? It's night time. The shepherds need to get some shut-eye. They've all come together, perhaps because there's water there. Their sheep have drunk in the evening, and then they put them in the sheepfold, in the corral. Perhaps it's a stone one, perhaps it's a hurdle one made of wood. And there's just a gate, and they all go in, and they're safe and secure. Yes, perhaps somebody could climb over the wall. Anybody who enters is, any other way than that main gate, is out up for mischief. He wants to nick a sheep. He wants to do some sheep rustling. He's after something that isn't his. And in the morning, the various shepherds would get up, perhaps at different times, and come in and say to the watchman, OK, I'll take them on now. And they say, come on, Lydia, come on, Rachel, come on, Rebecca, come on, Leah, come on, Tamar, come on, girls, come on, we're going out. And he would call his sheep by name, and the sheep would know. And the ones who didn't belong to him would just say, what's he talking about? Etc., etc., and stay put till their shepherd comes along. This is the picture that Jesus is giving about, I am the good shepherd. The sheep listen to his voice. And when he has brought them out on his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. And they'll never follow a stranger. In fact, they'll run away from him because they don't recognize a stranger's voice. And Jesus used this figure of speech, but they didn't understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said again, I tell you the truth. I am the gate for the sheep. All who ever came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep didn't listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He'll come in and go out and find pasture. The thief only comes in to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I'm also the good shepherd. And the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. I tell you something, that's why I'm not a good shepherd. Because I wouldn't lay down my life for these jolly old cantankerous, smelly, awkward, not always going where I want them to go, animals. Things that get foot rot and stuff caught in their fur, who get their head stuck in the sheep netting, who go out if somebody leaves. I remember taking my sheep up to Frank's place, and his fences weren't nearly as good as the ones I've got in Peasdown. And I went up one day, and there were two sheep missing. I counted mine, and there were two sheep missing. And I thought, oh, where have they gone? So I went looking along the boundary for the telltale signs of a bit of fleece on some barbed wire where they've ducked under got caught a bit and gone. And I found where they got out, and I went into the field and I saw them there. I said, "Come on, you girls." I was a bit cross, and I got a stick and I started chasing them. But you know, before I even needed to do much, they knew exactly where they had to come back to. And they came back into the field with the others. Okay, I put a hurdle there so that they couldn't get through. Following day, there were 4 sheep missing. I've put a hurdle in that gap. And so I go around the field again, and there is the telltale sign of a bit of fleece on a gap. And I go into the field, and there they are, all 4 of them. And you can guess the rest of the story, that I went the following day, and all 7 that I had some sheep and lambs, and they'd all got out by another place. And by the 3rd day, I'd actually plugged all the holes in the field. But they're so cantankerous, and you think sheep are stupid or foolish. But they're not. They know. And I tell you what, when I'm trying to round them up and get them in, sometimes I can lead them in. But that is normally because when I do it in the morning, when they're used to me coming down to feed them. If I go down, say, lunchtime, when they're out in the field and chewing, perhaps they're lying down chewing the cud or just grazing, and I try and get them in, they think, "What are you wanting us in there for?" And they won't go. So instead of trying to lead them, I have to try and drive them. And if I've only got myself, perhaps with a stick, or even 2 sticks, so that my arms are that wide and I can funnel them in. Still, sometimes there's one that will linger and the others are wandering on. And then I'll go and get that one that lingers and the others will shoot off. They know, you know. Sheep are not stupid. They may be foolish, they may be perverse, they may be cantankerous, but foolish they ain't. And I've started to learn a little bit about sheep. I don't really need to put that into pastor congregation, do I? No, of course I don't. Here's the picture then, that Jesus is the good shepherd. And he lays down his life for the sheep. Shepherding is a huge commitment. The real shepherds that I have seen in Eastern countries, when I've been to Morocco, when I've visited Karen and Emmy in sheep breeding country in Romania, people who look after their sheep and other people's sheep. One of the other things I wanted to just get onto, because it says the hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. And when the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it, the man runs away because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. And sometimes you get almost career vicars, pastors, ministers. They couldn't do anything else. They were Christians, or they wanted to be part of a church, or maybe they just wanted the power. And there are some people who just do it for the money. I almost wish sometimes that there weren't benefits for pastors. In the same way as the Levites had no inheritance in the land, everybody else did, but they didn't. They lived in other people's territory and came, and God was their inheritance. God was the person who supplied their needs from the people. And if pastors had that knowledge and understanding that God was their all provision, then maybe our churches would be somewhat different. So we've looked at the bad shepherds in Ezekiel. We've looked at the hired shepherd in John chapter 10. We've had a brief look at the good shepherd and the commitment and the fact that he was prepared to lay down his life for the sheep. And that's something that is a step too far for people like me. Don't mind getting up and preaching occasionally. I don't mind getting up and looking after the sheep. But being there 24/7 is not something that I've ever had a calling to. I want to finish now and just read this passage. And it's a passage in a most unlikely place. I'd never seen it before. After the service, if you like to, do come and have a look at it. this. This is Tim's sheep calendar. This was made by Kerin for me in 2004. And it's got various pictures of my sheep and me leading them. But he brought his people out like a flock. There's one that I particularly like. Which month is it? Oh, I think it's June. Here we are. He tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. He gently leads those who have young. And I did try and look after the sheep reasonably well. And that picture of Jesus doing it, of God doing it for his flock, and Jesus doing it for the church, is something which, having kept a few sheep, has become extremely precious to me. And I expect you remember the parable of the lost sheep, where it says, and when he found it, he put it on his shoulders. Rubbish, don't put a sheep on your shoulders, if I'm you. I had a scratch for a fortnight down my face where I tried it. I'd far rather carry a lamb in my arms than try and put it over my shoulders. Jeremiah chapter 2. Isaiah, Jeremiah chapter 2. I've got the advantage on you in that I put a bit of paper in there. And we're going to look at verses 14 to 20. Are we? Jeremiah chapter 22. No, it's Jeremiah actually chapter 3, I think. It's Jeremiah 3. Sorry, I've misquoted here. Jeremiah came at the end of Judah's reign. He was there when he prophesied all the way through, even against all the false prophets who were giving them false hope. Jeremiah 3, verse 14. I'm going to read it in a moment. Just setting the scene of Jeremiah, a faithful prophet. He was abused, he was misused, he was put in a pit. He had threats on his life. He did various visual aids. He had everybody against him. And still the people wouldn't turn to God and be have a stay of execution. He gave them the chance. And one of Jeremiah's prophecies was this. Verse 14. Return, faithless people, declares the Lord, for I am your husband. Excuse the mixed metaphors in a minute, but you'll see where we go. For I am your husband. I will choose you. One from a town and two from a clan, and bring you to Zion. Then I'll give you shepherds after my own heart, who will lead you with knowledge and understanding. In those days, when your numbers have increased greatly in the land, declares the Lord, men will no longer say, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. It will never enter their minds or be remembered. It will not be missed, nor will another be made. At that time, they will call Jerusalem the throne of the Lord, and all the nations will gather in Jerusalem to honor the name of the Lord. No longer will they follow the stubbornness of their evil hearts. In those days, the house of Judah will join the house of Israel, and together they will come from the northern land to the land I gave their forefathers as an inheritance. I myself said, how gladly would I treat you like sons and give you a desirable land, the most beautiful inheritance of any nation. I thought you would call me father and not turn away from following me. But like a woman unfaithful to her husband, so you have been unfaithful to me, O house of Israel. And when I think of faithless sheep, we say one thing and yet do another. And here was God just pleading with them, I want to choose you. And that's such a New Testament principle, isn't it? You have not chosen me, but I have chosen you. And I want to give you a shepherd after my own heart. What was David called? A man after God's own heart. Who was the shepherd which Ezekiel, 70 odd years after Jeremiah gave this prophecy, said, I myself will shepherd my people. Sorry, I will give them David. as a shepherd. I'll be their God, but I'll do all the donkey work, if you like, or all the sheep work, should we call it. And here's this picture, and now it comes really New Testamentish, doesn't it? Even though this is Jeremiah, 600 years before 586, yes, just coming up for 600 years before Jesus. I thought you would call me Father. It could almost be in Romans, couldn't it? You call me Abba, Father. And I would gladly treat you like sons and give you such a desirable land. That is, I believe, what we as a flock should be thinking of God. That he actually is capable of planning and sorting it out and doing it for us. Yes, because we are sheep-like, because we need a shepherd, because we need pastoring, because we need looking after and various things doing. So that if my sheep said, well, I want Tim because he feeds us, or another one said, well, I don't want him because he tips me upside down and trims me feet, I might end up with no flock at all, or just one or two, which are gluttonous and just want to feed all day. So it's not the sheep that choose the shepherd. We need to know God as our Father and let him choose for us.